The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Third and final hour of the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. Time flying by. News Talk 710 KNUS. Good to be with you here on the program. Happy Independence Day, one and all. Grab your kids, your grandkids. Have them sit by the radio station with you because we are about to read the Declaration of Independence. Pull it up on their phone. You can as well. We will have a group reading. But first, I'm going to try something that I've never done on the radio. I have just been working on this, and I'm feeling in a real patriotic mood. I'm going to take a whack at the Star Spangled Banner as we lead in to reading the Declaration of Independence. I'm going to take a whack at it on the harmonica this morning on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a recent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now necessity, which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation till his assent shall be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodations of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them, and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such dissolutions, to cause others to be elected, whereby legislative powers incapable of annihilation have returned to the people at large for their exercise. The state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. He, again we're talking about the King of England, has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to the laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it once at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments. For suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is, at this time, transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf on the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world, for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. An action of the Second Continental Congress, July 4th, 1776, the United Declaration of the 13 United States of America. As I read this again just now with you, I was once more struck by the way in which Thomas Jefferson and the committee on which he served to put this document together organized the argument, because it's brilliant. They begin with a statement of principles about government, about individual liberty, unalienable rights. Because when you set forward a basic principle, then what follows can show how those principles are undermined by the actions of another. In this case, most of the Declaration of Independence is a list of grievances. And so they go into those grievances. Let facts be submitted to a candid world. What powerful rhetoric. And they list out many different grievances for the majority of the Declaration. Then they say, look, we've set forward our principles. Here are the ways in which those principles are being violated. We've tried to express our objections. We've made olive branches, literally an olive branch petition, for example. And we've been rebuked, ignored by the king. And he has instead continued to exacerbate his tyranny. So with those principles in mind, with the facts laid forward in a candid world about all the usurpations of our liberties and affronts to our country, to our colonies, and given that he has not responded in any way conducive to addressing our concerns, we have to declare independence, and that's because we have the right to do so, it is the time to do so, and we will do so. We are doing so. And for the support of that very declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And my friends, the Declaration of Independence is the promise of America. The Constitution is the fulfillment, and we have a duty as Americans to celebrate and recognize not the 4th of July, but Independence Day. On the 4th of July, around the 4th of July, year-round for that matter. That is our duty, our solemn duty, and our solemn obligation as Americans, as a free people. And we must remind our next generation about those freedoms we hold so dear, that we all too often take for granted. Independence Day is that chance to recognize the promise of America. We do it every year, but oftentimes we do it just with the barbecue and fireworks and the music. Let us also do it with a recognition of what this holiday really is about. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger. We're going to take a break. On the other side, what did the great abolitionist, the freed slave, Frederick Douglass, think of the U.S. Constitution? In light of the 1619 Project, this is an important discussion. Professor Jonathan White of Christopher Newport University will join us to spend a few minutes talking about his view, Frederick Douglass's view, of the Declaration of Independence. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger. You're listening to The Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Happy Independence Day. Welcome back to The Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Beautiful. Beautiful rendition of America the Beautiful, the true classic version by the great late Ray Charles. As we have an hour of celebration for this Independence Day weekend. In the last segment, we just read the Declaration of Independence, an annual tradition on this program, live on air. And it is always such a profound document to read and to remember and to reflect on, because it is so significant to not only our country, but really to the world. because it has what the great abolitionist Frederick Douglass called saving principles. In a speech given in July of 1852, entitled What to the Slave is the Fourth of July, Frederick Douglass, who was recently, within the past several years, liberated because his freedom was purchased. Frederick Douglass resoundingly and quite rightly condemns slavery. And he does so without equivocation and very powerfully, passionately, as someone who lived from birth until he obtained freedom as a slave, and slavery would be an institution in our country for at least another 13 years after giving that speech. And yet, he still said the following. Pride and patriotism, not less than gratitude, prompt you to celebrate and to hold it in perpetual remembrance. I have said that the Declaration of Independence is the ring bolt to the chain of your nation's destiny. So indeed I regard it. The principles contained in that instrument are saving principles. Stand by those principles. Be true to them in all occasions, in all places, against all foes, and at whatever cost. Profound words from 1852. From the great abolitionist, the freed slave, Frederick Douglass. Important to recognize and to ponder these words in this moment. When we see resounding condemnation, there is now a push to change the name of George Washington University, which was published in an op-ed in none other than, you can't make this up, the Washington Post. What did Frederick Douglass think of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution? Let's talk about it with the author of a tremendous book, A House Built by Slaves, African-American Visitors to the Lincoln White House. He's a professor at Christopher Newport University of American Studies. John White joins us now. Jonathan, welcome to the show. It's good to talk with you again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me back.
Thanks for coming on. So I read a little passage from Frederick Douglass's 1852 speech, What to the Slave is the Fourth of July. And in the last segment, I read the entirety of the Declaration of Independence, especially now in this moment where we see a lot of racial angst and hostilities that have returned. What should we know about Frederick Douglass's view of the Declaration of Independence, Professor?
It's a great question. You know, Douglass's view of the Declaration and especially of the Constitution changed over time. So when he became free, he believed that the Constitution was a pro-slavery document, and he thought it was evil in the way that his mentor, William Lloyd Garrison, did. But Douglass later said, I did more reading and I studied more and I learned more, and he came to see that the Constitution embodied great principles of liberty. In fact, in this speech that we're talking about, Douglass called it a glorious liberty document. And for Douglass, he believed if you looked at the Declaration and if you looked at the Constitution, they didn't exclude people on account of race. They didn't talk about all white men are created equal. It said all men are created equal. And for someone like Douglass, that meant men and women of all colors everywhere. Same was true for Lincoln as well. And so by 1852, when Douglass gives this speech, he's come to this conclusion that African Americans were intended and should be included in the nation's founding document. The problem is that Southern Democratic administrations have been in charge of the government for most of the years from 1789 until 1852, and in fact, until 1861. And so they administer the government on pro-slavery principles. But Douglass is really pushing back against that, and he's saying, if we live up to our documents, if we carry them out and administer them the way they're supposed to be administered, they would really uphold principles of freedom.
You know, in that regard, as I always read that speech every year, I reflect on Douglass's words to that particular point right there, Professor Jonathan White, which is that he looked at the Declaration as laying out principles, saving principles, that through the institution of slavery, the United States of America was not even close to living up to. It's not that those principles were bad. We hear from Nicole Hannah Jones, for example, the purveyor of the New York Times 1619 Project, that these are false principles, false ideas that the country was built upon. But in Frederick Douglass's view, it's not that they were false at all. It's that they're true. They're saving principles. But the United States of America is a far cry from actually living out those principles, which is a very important distinction.
Right. That's exactly right. And if your readers have read her initial essay in the New York Times Magazine from August of 2019, you'll notice that Frederick Douglass is actually missing from her discussion because he doesn't fit into the framework that she's created. And what's interesting in my research on Black visitors to the Lincoln White House and on Black men and women who wrote to Lincoln during the Civil War is that they often pointed back to 1776 and to the American Revolution because Black men had fought in the Revolutionary War. They had fought in the War of 1812. And they said, these principles are ones that we've been fighting for generations. They also pointed out that Black men could vote in a number of the states in 1776 and 1789. And so Black men were part of the people at the time of the founding. And I think that that's something that's really lost or forgotten today. It's really in Jacksonian America in the 1820s and 30s that the right to vote is taken away from Black men. But in the early Republic, Black men with property could vote in a number of the states, maybe as many as 11, in the same way that white men with property could.
So relevant to today, then, what we're talking about, Professor Jonathan White of Christopher Newport University, what we're talking about matters how. Why should Americans care about this discussion that we are having on the radio this Independence Day weekend?
Well, we're having a lot of discussions about the relevance of the Constitution. Is the Constitution a good document? You're hearing a lot of people now say the Constitution should be replaced, should be gotten rid of. And people want to throw it away as a relic of a bygone era that had, you know, principles that were very immoral, very different from our own. And I think that we're missing something in this conversation. We need voices like Frederick Douglass or Abraham Lincoln to remind us of these saving principles that are embedded in these documents. Lincoln said that the Declaration of Independence was a standard maxim of a free society, something that you point to, something that you long for, that you reach for, that you might never perfectly attain, but it's set up as a goal for equality for all people. And I think if we recaptured that sense of the Declaration and of the Constitution, we would have a greater appreciation for them.
We're talking with the author of the book, A House Built by Slaves, African-American Visitors to the Lincoln White House. It is a fascinating read, definitely worth checking out. Professor Jonathan W. White of Christopher Newport University in Newport News, Virginia. Just a couple minutes left with you, Professor. And one thing that we're seeing now, I mean, there's new discussion of changing George Washington University's name and so forth. How should we view the very flawed founding fathers in light of what they were able to achieve as far as the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and those principles that were enshrined in those documents, given, again, that they had deep flaws, including, for example, Thomas Jefferson did not free his slaves after death.
Right.
You had a lot of those flaws. How should we view those individuals in your assessment?
Well, it's interesting. When Frederick Douglass talks about the founders in this speech, What to the Slave is the 4th of July, he praises them, and he never once mentions that they were slave owners.
Right.
He praises them for what they accomplished, for what they did, for what they sacrificed, and then he points to the hypocrisy of Americans in his day who have allowed slavery to prosper and to grow and are being hypocritical and not living up to those founding principles. And I think, you know, I think it's foolish to throw out, you know, to use a overused phrase, to throw out the baby with the bathwater. I think it's foolish to say we're going to get rid of all these people, all these great symbols of our country, because they were flawed. And this doesn't excuse them for being slaveholders, and it doesn't make it right. But I also don't think that we get rid of them entirely because of one aspect of their lives and ignore the rest of their lives. And, you know, again, not to minimize the horrors and the evil of slavery, I wholeheartedly believe that slavery was America's original sin. But I also know that for myself, I don't want to be remembered for the worst aspects of my life. And I think we need to be careful when we just look back at people and we say, well, they are only relevant because they were slave owners. And we forget. I'm not remembered that way for my worst features.
Absolutely. I think that is so well put. Professor Jonathan White, final question for you. 30 seconds, sir. A message for our audience from you on this Declaration of Independence celebration weekend.
Well, I think it's great that you read the Declaration of Independence to your audience. I think that's something that everyone should do on an annual basis. I read the Declaration on the second day of my class every fall to my 100 students in the class. And I one time found that one of my students later tweeted that she was crying in the background and hoped back of the class and hoped I didn't see it. I think it's just such a moving document, and hearing the words can remind us of the importance of the sacrifices of that generation. And if we remember their sacrifices, we can have a better appreciation of what they gave us.
I think no truer words have been spoken. Professor Jonathan W. White, check out his book, A House Built by Slaves, African-American Visitors to the Lincoln White House. Thank you so much, and happy Independence Day to you, my friend.
Thanks to you as well.
Once again, Professor John White joining us here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. Final segment up ahead, a rendition of a song that you do not want to miss. News Talk 710 KNUS. We're back, the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Happy Independence Day, one and all. What a true treasure it is to be able today to be on the radio and to share them with you the Declaration of Independence, both in reading it and in speaking about it with a profound guest. I think he's doing it. He must be a phenomenal professor of American Studies at Christopher Newport University in Newport News, Virginia. Professor Jonathan White. Have a great Independence Day. We are going to go out now to a very patriotic song. This was live on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show in August of 2019 when we were Saturday nights, with two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Richie Furay of Buffalo, Springfield, and Poco, doing a phenomenal song called Don't Tread on Me. I'd never played it before. We did it together. Richie Furay singing and playing guitar here in studio with yours truly on harmonica. This is a wonderful song, a real treasure called Don't Tread on Me. Have a great weekend. Happy Independence Day. And as always, may God bless America. All right. Heart of
can see. Yeah, you know what I mean. Don't pretend you're naive. The writing on the wall's written just as plain as day.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.